Welcome to What She Said. I'm your host, Lucy Lucroft, a freelance journalist and blogger from London. Each week, I chat to awesome humans about their journey to where they are today, and we share lots of blogging tips and tricks too. You can hear the entire back catalogue, as well as new episodes wherever you listen to podcasts by searching for my name, or searching What She Said, or you can go to my website, wanderloose.com. And if you want to come say hi online, I'm at Lucy Lucroft on Instagram or Twitter, or over at my blog, wanderloose.com. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to another episode of What She Said. It's episode 14 with the wonderful Carolyn of The Slow Traveller. So before we jump in, I need to do a little sales pitch, which I feel a bit uncomfortable about, but I just need to get over myself. So my Simple SEO Success course is closing for enrolment on Tuesday, so tomorrow. But before then, I am offering you 20% off with the code Easter Egg. So it's £60 full price, and 20% off takes you to about £48. If you want to know more about the course, there's lots of lovely testimonials of students who recommend it. Then just head to the show notes and there is a link for you to have a look at everything. Okay, back to the episode. So I chatted with the wonderful Carolyn of The Slow Traveller. It's another giggle fest as we had a natter about Instagram, slow travel, photography, how and why Carolyn decided to do a degree in it. So full disclosure, you might be wondering why we didn't talk about her recent post that went viral when she hacked her own Instagram account. You might also be wondering why I didn't pick up on this, because we actually talk about photoshopping and Carolyn's views on augmented reality and the Emilia Liana, Taj Mahal, furore when people accused her of photoshopping tourists out of the picture. I mean, Carolyn even says in the podcast that she's 33, so I don't know how I didn't work out her Instagram hacking. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then go to her post. It's in the show notes. It was really fascinating. Carolyn basically made a whole story of her 22-year-old self and posted about it on Instagram with a really heavily photoshopped face to make her look like she was 22. And it was fascinating because nobody questioned it. We didn't question it. I'm sure some people did, but anyhow, I didn't question it. And I knew she was 33, not 22. So, it's pretty fascinating. So you might find when you get to the end of the podcast, you're thinking, what the fudge? Why didn't they talk about this? So that's why, because we recorded it before it had all happened. Carolyn was super honest. She was really generous and funny. And I felt really inspired after chatting with her. So if you're feeling a little bit meh about Instagram or about your career or about traveling, this is the episode for you. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi there, Lucy. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, and thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm really excited to chat to you. So for anybody that doesn't know who you are, would you mind introducing yourself, please, and telling us a little bit about your blogging journey so far?
Yeah, of course. So I am a freelance photographer from and based currently in Newcastle. I also work as an influencer through Instagram as The Slow Traveller. Dabble a little bit in blogging as well, although it's been a while, I think. I need to get back on that. I'm also currently studying a degree in photography and digital imaging, a university degree. And yeah, so that's about me right now.
Just a few little things to keep you busy.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Nothing overwhelming whatsoever going on.
No, not at all. Just a degree, influencing on Instagram, a blog on the side. Yeah. Where did it all get started then? I've read this post of yours a few times actually, because it really resonates with me. It's the one about why quitting your job to travel was the best thing you ever did, because I have quite a similar experience in that I quit my job to travel in a very similar way, just having a glass of wine with my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, both kind of hating our jobs. Like, should we just quit and go travelling? Yeah, right then.
That was pretty much it for me and Gary as well. Literally, we were just like, shall we do that then? Oh yeah, okay, so we'll just hand our notice in, leave our flat and just go, yeah. And we thought, you know, we were like, oh yeah, we've got a few grand saved as well, so that should keep us going for a couple of years. And that didn't really pan out, but never mind. The optimism, I think, was the key thing there. We were living in Bath at the time. We'd lived previously in London for a little while. Mm-hmm. And that was just more about kind of new opportunities for jobs and stuff like that. Gary's a journalist, so he was working for Future in Bath. And I was working for a telecommunications company in London. But they let me kind of work from home in Bath. And I enjoyed it, but it just wasn't something I was kind of passionate about. And I started doing like an evening course, just like a really basic evening course in photography. And it was just really how to use a DSLR and just the basics of like digital photography.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought, how can I get out of this? You know, how can I kind of try and do something that I really want to do without kind of things like university and stuff like that? And it was just, I thought travel, firstly, something I'd always wanted to do. Secondly, I kind of thought it might be a good way into starting a career in photography as well. Yeah. It was just a case of, same as you really, Friday night, you know, finished the week at work, a couple of beers, and I was just like, do you want to travel the world? And I thought it was kind of like, there would be a bit of pushback, but there definitely wasn't. It was like, yeah, okay, definitely. And then we just spent, I think it was about a bit short of a year, just kind of cutting back on, you know, the luxuries. We didn't eat out or go out to bars drinking, you know, that kind of thing, and just kind of saved what we could, and returned home. Both of us are from the Northeast, so we kind of returned home to say farewells to the family and stuff, and then that was it for 2 years. We kind of popped back twice within that time, because the first year was kind of India and Southeast Asia, and the second year was Latin America. So we came home in between to, you know, just to show our phases, I suppose.
It's so similar to my journey, although I'm not making this into a big episode about me. They're great, Carolyn, back to me. But that's basically what we did as well. We spent we were away for two and a half years, but we came back in between for a wedding and Christmas. First chunk was India, Southeast Asia, but we basically stayed in that side of the world totally, because we ended up living in Thailand for a big chunk. So same as you, that's kind of where my new career developed. So going back to, because the photography was the thing that drove everything. So at the time you weren't thinking, oh, I'm going to start an Instagram, I'm going to be an influencer, I'm going to be a blogger. When did that happen?
That actually, the Instagram actually came really in the second year, but first it was actually right place, right time sort of thing, because we were in Northern India, and we were trekking between India and Nepal when the big earthquake happened.
Oh, wow.
The big Nepal earthquake. Yeah. So, I mean, we weren't, you know, right at the centre of it, but we felt the earthquakes, and we were stuck in Darjeeling for a few weeks. While,
oh, I love Darjeeling so much.
Oh, no, it's amazing, isn't it?
Did you go to, totally off topic, but did you go to that pub?
Oh, the one, I think it's probably the only...
I think it's the only pub in Darjeeling. It's kind of right at the really near the train station, opposite, there's like a shopping centre with Domino's.
Oh, I don't know.
There's a pub with a fire.
I don't know. The pub with a fire. Like England.
Yeah. Yeah, it was wild.
No, we spent a lot of time in a bar that was owned by a guy that ran one of the most popular, like, excursion adventure sort of places, and that's how we ended up doing the trek. So it was like a 5 or 6 day trek. It was a bit mad, and it was called the Singalila Ridge, and it took you kind of between Nepal, Northern India and Sikkim as well. But it was amazing. But and it was a case of Gary was already an established writer and journalist at the time, and that was kind of kind of the story. So he pitched the story, and because I'd kind of sort of knew how to use the camera, I mean, I will never show anybody those first pictures that were published ever.
Yeah, I was surprised when you said that. Were they bad?
Oh, God, atrocious. Yeah. I hope the magazine aren't listening, by the way. because they published them. No, they were, you know, but I suppose it happens even if I look back to something that might have been published 6 months ago. I kind of think, God, I wish I could redo that again. You know, you're constantly improving.
It's all relative, isn't it?
But I mean, all I was using at the time with Photoshop was literally like the basic, like contrast and clarity, but it, you know, in a very over the top way.
Whack them straight up. Like,
look, I know how to use contrast and clarity. Yeah, straight up. It was just a mess. But yeah, but at the same time, you know, it kind of kickstarted something that I didn't really think was possible before I went traveling. So I'm not one of those people who, you know, would say everybody should do that or preach about it or anything like that. You know, everyone should travel the world and stuff, because it's not right for everybody. And some people are lucky enough, I guess, to, or fortunate enough to find, you know, out who they are and what they want to do at an earlier stage. And, you know, that's brilliant. For me, it was brilliant for me, because it kind of, you know, it started a whole new life, I guess.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's such a, like, you know, from the outside, you're like, oh, you know, you go traveling and then become a journalist and a travel journalist and photographer. Like, it is so, because we traveled with someone who, they were a journalist and photographer.
Okay.
Like
friends that you had, or?
Sorry, say that again?
Friends that you met there, or?
Yeah, we just met them in Kerala. Yeah, we met them in Kerala and ended up traveling with them. Right up until Tampi, I think. And so she was writing for, they were already kind of established in America. He was already a travel photographer. She was already a travel journalist. But it was crazy because they ended up traveling for like, I don't know, I think they only came back maybe last year. And they were traveling for like 4 or 5 years writing for Condé Nast And so, like, it's amazing that you did that after just a few months. It was only, what, 4 months?
I know. Well, no, it was, so we left in the January, and I had work published. I think it was maybe April.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty mad. And it wasn't, you know, I mean, I was in a very fortunate position because I was traveling with Gary. Mm. So had he not have been, you know, a journalist, would it have happened? Probably not. But at the same time, it was kind of like, it was just, it felt really amazing that I'd kind of done this really scary thing.
Yeah.
And felt like things were quite quickly starting to sort of fall into place. And yeah, and that was it. So that was the start of it. And I had a few published pieces through the 2 years that we were away, but the Instagram happened. I dabbled before. I mean, I didn't really, I think I used to do what everybody probably did when I first opened the app and thought it was just somewhere that you could edit pictures. And then like, I'd quickly delete the picture, but it would save to your phone. And then I would kind of publish these really weird kind of filter pictures to Facebook and be like, this is my real face. These are the colors that I'm reading. but yeah, we spent a bit of time in Spain, between after India and Asia, we wanted to learn Spanish because we knew that we were going to travel around Latin America. And you need a degree of understanding and basic kind of knowledge of the language, because I don't know how you'd manage otherwise, really, in some of the parts of Latin America. So we spent about 4 months in Spain. We kind of got this little apartment up in the hills in Andalusia, a place called Rio Gordo. And I just kind of, I don't know, that's when I started to, because we just had all this time. We were just sort of in this apartment, just kind of, you know, just dossing about, really. Learning a bit of Spanish. And I started to post more, maybe thoughtful pictures. I was putting a little bit more effort into it, I guess. And but I didn't know that, you know, at the time, I didn't really, it wasn't about kind of becoming popular or about about kind of exposure, or I didn't realize that you could make a job out of it or anything like that. It was just, I just really enjoyed it, if you know what I mean. And that's when I kind of started to use Instagram properly. And it was when I started posting pictures of the buildings in Latin America. Once we got there, Mexico was the first kind of place. And I started to post buildings because I was really like amazed by all this colonial architecture, you know, across the other side of the world that I didn't know anything about.
Yeah.
And people love it. You know, people love that kind of, and I think because most people's largest audience on Instagram tends to be the US, and I suppose it's quite aspirational, because the architecture in these places is so old in comparison to, I suppose, what they know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see. And I think that's kind of what kickstarted my Instagram, and then it just kind of kicked off a little bit after that, I think.
So when, I'm quite interested in, because I have a similar, or a lot of people who are travel bloggers or travel photographers or travel writers, whatever, with Instagram, that can be quite tricky, because merging, going from your travel photography to when you're at home, how do you, because I know that's quite tricky for you, because you've got a very, very, I mean, I love both styles of your photography, and it doesn't jar for me at all, because it's very, you have a very unique style, but obviously everybody knows you, or there'll be a quite big chunk of your audience who know you, your books and your beautiful window and your book stacks. And then when you're traveling, do you find that quite a tricky thing to balance?
Not now so much, and I think that's down to what you were talking about having a certain aesthetic and style that you've kind of developed, and I think that's why it doesn't jar so much. But when I first came home from the 2 years of travelling, and during the time that I was away, I'd become popular for this kind of, these facades and this architecture. That's what my account was, predominantly just buildings, basically. And I panicked a bit because we came home and I thought, you know, what am I going to kind of do? You know, it's this, my audience are kind of here for these beautiful buildings, and Newcastle doesn't have a great deal of that. It's a beautiful city, but not, you know, to me, not in the same sort of kind of romantic way, I guess, that, you know, you have in places like Buenos Aires and Mexico City and stuff like that. But, and I don't know, I think it's just perseverance. I just kind of, and I tried to do it slowly as well. So I kind of was still posting some of my older travel pictures, which I still do now. And then kind of one of each, or a couple at home and one building and that sort of thing, and just kind of eased it in, I suppose. But I just kept going with it. And I think with mine as well, I think I use captions, and the way that I, it's more like a journal, so the picture just is just there as a kind of pretty image to go alongside whatever I'm kind of, you know, mouthing off about that day. rather than an image that's been created to represent what I've done today.
Yeah.
So I think that helps a bit as well, you know, because I think captions are you know, important, really.
Definitely.
When it comes to audience. But yeah, I think, and now it's, you know, I'm not really traveling the same way as I was before. I mean, I haven't been away for quite some time now. I've got a couple of things coming up, but I just kind of tend to, you know, go between the two and just try and kind of keep that aesthetic, which I guess is the thing that makes it flow.
Yeah, I suppose it's a bit like finding your voice in writing. There comes a time when you don't think about it anymore, so I guess it's the same with photography as well.
Yeah, I think so, definitely, because if you know, you could write about anything, and if it's in your voice, it's you. So I think you're right. I think the same goes for photography, definitely.
And did you find along the way, talk about your blog as well as your Instagram, were there any stumbling blocks, any times that you thought, I can't do this, you know, especially when you kind of came home and started, you know, you are an influencer now. So when you got to that level, I'm quite interested to know the things that people come up against.
Do you mean with the blog?
Both. Well, I had Instagram.
Well, I had a blog before. So when I was traveling, I'd started the blog, and it was kind of like, and this was before I had an audience, I suppose. And I started, and it was kind of, I don't know, I'd try to do this kind of these romantic little travel stories. So it wasn't like valuable factual information, which I think is what most people kind of want from a travel blog in a way. I tried to do something which I thought was unique and different. And I tried to do this kind of, some of it was like photo stories, some of it was like, so I stayed at this mad hotel in Bangkok, and it was where one of my favourite films was, some parts of it was shot. And I kind of done this really weird blog post where I tried to kind of take images that sort of looked like scenes from the film, and then sort of wrote this weird, you know, that kind of thing. I tried to do something different, and it just didn't work at all. You know, because I don't know what people, you know, I don't think people really would have got much from it, if that makes sense.
Oh, do you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I totally understand what you mean. There's a smaller audience for that type of writing, for sure. But do you know Brenna, This Battered Suitcase?
No, I don't think so.
So she writes very much in that way. She writes, you know, she okay. writes a bit of a combination, but she was on, I think, episode 2 or episode 3 of series 1 of the podcast.
We'll have to have a listen.
Yeah, have a listen. But also, I'm terrible because it's the first series, so I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I was just rambling.
Kind of like my first published pictures.
Though. Yeah.
At least you're confident enough that it's still available for people to listen to on the on your website, though.
I do think about deleting them sometimes because they're just so embarrassing. But yeah, so she writes like beautiful essays and like talks, you know, love stories and all sorts of things. And that's kind of her thing. That's what she's known for. But I get what you're saying, you know. When it's
but I
just
suppose
that,
my strong point, I guess, is more, maybe just isn't writing, if that makes sense. Yeah. Maybe, you know, it was that. I think the stuff that does well on my blog tends to be stuff about Instagram and tip stuff, you know, like engagement on Instagram or how to take better pictures.
Yeah.
And more recently I've done the odd kind of opinion sort of thing. And if it kind of relates to social media or Instagram, it tends to do better.
Yeah.
But you know, I suppose those are the things that I feel like I know a bit more about, so it just makes more sense to kind of write stuff about the stuff I know a little bit about.
Yeah, and the stuff that flows easier for you is always going to be better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So when you started that blog, when did that... Well, two questions, actually. I'm really interested to know what your favourite film is.
Okay. Well, It's In the Mood for Love by Wong Kar-wai.
Oh, wow.
A Korean...
That's a really interesting film. I haven't heard anyone say that before, although I know it's very popular. What's the hotel?
Oh, what was it called? I can't even remember now. But it's like... I'll try and find it while we're speaking and tell you what it is. But it's basically like a really old hotel, and it's like really like... They have all these posters around inside that say like, you know, like no sex and no, it's very strange. And like, it's so, the rooms are really, really basic. And there's posters about that as well. And that, you know, if you come and stay here, you're not allowed to complain. They also don't have, like, you have to book through the website, and they like basically vet.
Amazing.
Bet you a little bit before they accept, like, so you're trying to spend money and they're like, well, wait a minute, we might not let you do that. It's a very strange place, but it's really, really grand and beautiful in the kind of the public areas, like the foyer and places like that. Lots of like lots of reds and beautiful tiles and dark wood, and it's a very atmospheric place, and I can totally see why Wong Kar-wai chose to shoot scenes there, because it's just, you kind of feel like you've stepped into another realm. Anyway, and I didn't particularly like Bangkok either, so it was kind of a bit of a refuge. But we'd been kind of city hopping a bit, and I think Bangkok was like, we got to Bangkok after kind of hopping between cities, and it was just like, oh, we need a bit of nature, bit of kind of. So I think that was probably one of the reasons. But yeah, have you seen the film?
No, I haven't. I've never seen it.
I definitely recommend it. It's really beautiful, visually very beautiful, and a very kind of just a very gorgeous story. But it's kind of voyeurism as well. You can the way it's shot and the way you see it as a viewer, it's kind of like you're spying on this kind of relationship. It's very, very good.
Yeah, sounds amazing. And I love Bangkok. It's one of my favourite cities. So
yeah, I need to go back. I think in a different frame of mind, I think I'd see it in a completely, different light. It was just wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah. And actually, I think I wrote a post once about, how you feel about places when you destinations. If you arrive at a destination before you are ready to leave the last destination, that destination is kind of screwed. You're not going to necessarily like it. And it's the same if you leave a place before you're ready. I think there's so much about, there's some places that I just really think, God, I hated that place. But I probably wouldn't if I had gone in a different
place. No, I totally agree. I don't think you'd really hate anywhere, would you? I think it's just a case of, are you kind of ready to be there? Or are you in the right frame of mind?
Exactly.
You know, is it, or, you know, and if because of the fact that we'd spent the last maybe 2 weeks previous to that in cities, it was just, we didn't want to be there, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It wasn't really that we didn't like Bangkok as a city. It was just
more the cities.
Then we were just like, let's head up to the north and kind of chill out in, you know, in the countryside for a bit. But yeah, I would like to go back, definitely.
I love the north of Thailand.
Me too.
I've absolutely adored it.
We didn't spend a lot of time in the south. We went to Bangkok and then we took a train from Bangkok all the way up to Chiang Mai and spent most of our time between there and Pai.
Oh,
but it was off season as well, so it was quite quiet, which was nice. Yeah, I loved it there.
I absolutely hate Chiang Mai. I've been so many times and I think I hate it because, I mean, that's a really stupid thing to say even, that I hate it, because there's nothing really about it to hate. But I think it's because I'm really contrary, and it used to really annoy me whenever I would read travel blogs. They'd be like, Chiang Mai is amazing. Like, all the US travel bloggers seem to live in Chiang Mai.
And yeah.
Because of that, I think I was like, well, I'm not going to like it then. Because everybody else likes it.
Because everybody else does, yeah. Yeah, it's like, we were quite snobby when we first started traveling, and we were like, oh, who are all these tourists?
Yeah.
Being tourists, we just like to walk about, and you know, who are all these people at these tourist sites? And we were like, we're tourists though, we're doing exactly the same thing. You become a bit snobby, don't you?
Totally. Travel snobbery is just it's so funny, but I also experienced, I'm sure you did too, the people, especially in India was the worst for this, people who were snobby of me, like I wasn't good enough traveler because I don't know, I wasn't eating dirt and
walking
outside
around with no shoes on, even though Indian people don't do that.
Yeah, I know.
Very strange.
Yeah, the no shoes thing used to really bug me because I was like, India is one of the dirtiest places I've ever been. There's so much cow poo everywhere. I don't want to walk in
the
cow.
But not even the locals do.
No,
so it's like, why? So I don't know. I don't kind of understand the concept.
No, me neither.
But each to their own.
Yeah, quite.
I really understand it.
I'm making this all about travel, and I shouldn't. Although I'm sure people will be super interested to hear all about your travel life and all of your favourite destinations and everything. But I think they'll probably be more interested in the things that really kick-started everything for you. So we talked about, obviously, that you got published when you were on the road, and, I mean, it's pretty clear to see you're such an amazing photographer. You're amazing. You take the most beautiful pictures. That, obviously, you're going to do well on Instagram. But what point did you feel like you were, I don't know, you've made it, as it were, or at what point did it become something that could be a full-time job?
Well, I think I kind of saw it as that from the beginning, that I'd kind of risked, you know, leaving a job that paid a decent salary and stuff to kind of pursue this. And to be honest, I spent, even though I had work published, it's only been recently that it started money-wise or kind of living up to anywhere near, you know, what I'd been earning doing a proper job, you know. So it's, I think it was about kind of wanting it enough to kind of take that risk and live, you know, live a certain way, if that makes sense.
And like, as in taking the risk before you're ready, not waiting until someone says to you, this is it, you are officially able to give up your job.
Oh, definitely.
Giving yourself permission, basically.
Yeah, and I think it's, and I didn't know, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't, all I'd done was this night course, and I kind of knew what buttons to press on the crappy DSLR that I spent 200 quid on, you know, back a few years ago. But I think when I kind of started to move away from my hometown, I think that was the start of it really, actually. And that, you know, I lived London and then Bath, and that was about 3 years in total. And I think in hindsight, that was the start of it, I think.
Yeah.
It was this kind of thinking, instead of, I don't know, kind of waiting for something to happen, which never will.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, I need to start moving. I need to start kind of doing something that's different to what I'm doing right now, because, you know, otherwise this is how it's going to be, you know, for the rest of my life, I guess, or working life anyway, which wasn't really making me happy. And it's only been quite recently that I've started to think, oh, okay, so this is actually, you know, I'm starting to reap the rewards a little bit of that kind of period of the risk that I took. But then there's still that kind of, because it's not the same as having a kind of 9-to-5 with a contract and a salary, there's still that kind of niggling thought where you kind of think, this is too good to be true, you know. You know, I can't be earning money from photography, no way. You know? Yeah, but I think it's just about, you know, if you do want something enough, and it's not all roses, it is tough, you know, and it's like, I guess it's just, yeah, about perseverance, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's a bit of a lesson in making things happen, and you say this in the post where you talk about quitting your job to travel, and, you know, luck. I think luck can really be something that holds us back, using the word luck, because then you almost exclude yourself from that. And it means that you are just waiting. And
definitely. But then on the flip side of that, there's also the, you know, in Western society, there's this kind of unrealistic idea that we're fed that you can do anything you want. And I think that can also be a problem too. I think it's about finding, because it's just, because you can't, it's not realistic. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
You know, athletes are athletes for a reason, kind of thing. And I think it's about kind of finding the balance. Is this something that you want enough to make happen, but is it, you know, and can you actually do it, sort of thing? And yeah, but
yeah, it's like the sweet spot between the two.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
That's really interesting that you say that, because I think quite a lot of people won't say those, because it feels a bit, I think you're right. I think we are fed that line. You can do anything. You can, especially as women, you can. Well, it's kind of a two-pronged thing, because actually it's not a compliment to say you can do anything you want. You can be a mum and have 25 children, and you can still have your career, and you can do this. Like, well, actually, no, you can't do all of those things.
No, I know.
That is
exactly.
Also okay.
but what happens because of that, because we are told that in our society, is that then comes
the negative effects of that, which leads to feelings of, you know, inadequacy and, you know, that you're, you know, not doing enough.
And then that,
you know, the results of that can be sometimes, you know, fatal, if that makes sense. It's
Yeah, totally. It can kill your dreams, can't it? Because you just think, well, I completely agree. But onto much happier stuff, because you did do...
Bit too deep, I think.
Not at all. I love it. I could do this all day. But I suddenly thought people listening might suddenly be saying, oh, that's it. I've had enough. I can't do any of it. Carolyn and Lucy have told me, give up your dream.
Yeah. Don't dream.
Stop dreaming, you fool. But obviously this amazing dream did happen for you. You made it happen, because you're talented enough and you made it happen. And yeah, I suppose there's an element of timing in there as well and all the rest of it, but it happened, which is awesome. What does your typical, and I know saying typical is actually kind of ridiculous when you're self-employed, but what does your kind of typical work week look like?
Well, at the minute, because I'm in the second semester of my second year at university, so it's hard to kind of try and balance the two things. So I took quite a lot of work on through Instagram and photography at the back end of last year, which meant that this kind of part of the semester I can focus a bit more on university, because it's very intense. So I've taken on a couple of kind of longer term jobs just to make up for, paying for rent and money and that kind of thing. But at the minute it's kind of a lot of the focus is going into university and the projects that I'm kind of working on, which are so different from... It's so weird because they're so different from the stuff that I do on Instagram. It's quite weird to try and find a balance. I mean, it all feeds into the same thing. It's all photography, but they're so different. It's kind of...
Do people know who you are at university?
I think more recently, I think my lecturers have recently found out and stuff, which I don't know, there's this weird... embarrassing feeling, which I don't know why. It's just, I think it's because they're, you know, old school. A couple of them are like documentary photographers and you know, sculptors and, you know, these kind of really traditional, you know, people that work in traditional photographic or artist ways, that it's a kind of, in my mind, I think, will they understand what I'm doing? But I think they kind of understand that social media is, you know, a huge thing now, even for kind of photographers that are more classed as kind of fine art photographers, and it's still just as important. So I think, I mean, I don't know what they think, but I think they kind of understand that, you know, that it's not, that I can kind of do both of them and neither one of them mean any less, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
But it is quite strange.
What made you decide to do the degree?
Well, I'd always wanted to do a degree, but I didn't really know, there was nothing that I kind of wanted enough to learn about to do a degree. It was kind of like I hadn't found that thing.
Yeah.
And I'm always impressed when I come across, so a lot of the students that are on my course are obviously young people who've came out of college or A-level. So, you know, I'm 33 almost, and some of the people that I'm kind of working alongside are, you know, 18, 20, that kind of thing. And it's, I'm always really impressed that they've kind of, because with photography it's not the same as doing like a business degree or maths or something a bit more academic. So it kind of impresses me that these people are that into something like photography enough to kind of spend their money and, you know, spend 3 years doing it. And I'm just kind of, I think as well, because I knew that we were coming home after traveling, it was just, I thought, well, I can do this now, you know, I'm going to invest these 3 years. And I think you can never be, you can never learn enough about a subject. And while I was teaching myself photography, it became a bit of an obsession. Like, while we were traveling, I would spend hours and hours every single day doing tutorials online, reading about photography, every single day. And now I get to kind of learn, but from people who, you know, are specialists in the field. And it's really amazing for things like, I'm really into like kind of the philosophy behind and the theory and the critical side of it and stuff. So it's just, yeah, it's brilliant. And I'm just glad that I'm able, because of what I do outside of uni, I'm able to do it, I suppose. But yeah.
That's awesome. It's so awesome. I think I'm always impressed when people know what they want to do at the age of 18.
I know, how?
Well, controversially, I personally think that it's ridiculous for anyone to think at 18 they know what they want to do. And it's great if you do, but I think that
I agree with you.
Push you into stuff.
When you're asked to choose subjects at the age of, kind of, what is it, 14, 15?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like 14,
you're just like, I was an idiot. I was just a complete moron. I had no idea what the hell I was doing.
Yeah, of course.
So to think, you know, and I had got rubbish GCSEs. I didn't stay on at school. I didn't do A-levels. You know, I went straight into a job because I was more interested in going out and, you know, buying crap clothes. And
because you're young. That's what you're doing, just learning about life. I think one of the most damaging things is the fact that university, I'm a bit older than you, but when we were younger, became so accessible. And I think that's, just one of the most terrible things that could happen. I understand why it was, you know, Labour were kind of, their whole thing was making it less elitist and making it so that everybody could go to university, which is great. Everyone should be able to go to university if they want. But actually what happened is that, you know, hundreds and thousands and millions of people went into university degrees, which then got completely devalued because everyone was doing them. They came out of university and everyone has a degree. So they're not earning any more money. They've got a shed load of debt. It's just, stupid.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, a couple of my friends, some of them have two or three degrees because the first degree that they did was, they've done, you know, they don't have any interest in that subject anymore. And so they've gone and done other degrees.
Yeah.
And Gary, my partner, he'd done the same. So he, I think like his first one was like sports science or something very kind of, you know, because he was a young lad.
Yeah.
And then he went much later and done a degree in journalism, and then recently done his master's in creative writing. But he was older than, you know, than most of the people that were on the course at the time, because, you know, he tried and failed before because it just wasn't, he didn't know at the time but had no interest in that subject. It's kind of, I agree with you. I don't know how at that age you can kind of know.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
And you shouldn't need to know.
Just live your life. It's fine.
Yeah.
You're going to be working till, I mean, by the time my daughter retires, she'll probably be 120. So just chill out.
Oh, no. Got so much time.
Just go work somewhere that's fun for now. Don't worry about degrees.
Just leave school, get a job, booze.
This is the least inspirational podcast out there at the moment. Quit your dreams.
Booze.
Don't worry about a degree. It's nonsense. We're all screwed. You're going to be working till you're 120.
No, but it is. No, I'm really, I feel very fortunate that I'm able to do it now. And the fact that they kind of allowed me to do it based on just life experience was, you know, I didn't have to do any courses or do an access course or anything like that. It was just a case of, I had a Skype, I was in Chile at the time, had a Skype interview with the leader of the course, and he was just like, yeah, come. And I was like, okay. So, but it's been a real eye-opener. I have days where I'm like, Gary, I'm leaving. I'm leaving. This is having an effect on my... And he's like, okay, we'll talk about it tomorrow. And the next thing I'm like, look at this exciting stuff. Look at the, you know, look what I'm learning about. And he's like, you're not leaving now then. Yeah.
One thing that I wanted to ask you about, because I think it's a bit hot topic at the moment, and it's quite interesting because obviously you're learning a lot more about photography and you know, taking it really back to basics probably and going back to philosophy and theory and all of those sorts of things. What are your thoughts on the current trend of photoshopping? And because, so I have a Facebook group for this podcast, and each week we talk about struggles and things that, you know, everybody gets a bit honest and says, oh, this week I feel crap about this, or this week I feel great about this, whatever. And a lot of people have said, Instagram, I'm feeling really down on my Instagram because I just don't want to have to use Photoshop and I don't know how to use it, but I feel like I can only get ahead if I do that. What are your, and when I say using Photoshop, I don't mean to edit your pictures or tweak pictures. I mean, you know, for kind of...
manipulation.
Yeah. Would that be the word? Manipulation or augmented reality and things like that. Not even just cinemagraphs, to be honest. Things beyond that. What do you think about that? Has that been something that you feel...
Well, I just think Instagram has kind of moved on and is always moving on so much that... And I think people kind of... are learning, even as viewers, learning more about photography. And so taste shifts and changes too. And so I think maybe, I don't know, I think, and with manipulation, I mean, it's been around since the start of photography. Mm. And obviously in a different way, you know, things like photo montage and the alteration of chemical photography processes and that sort of thing. It's always been done as long as photography's been around, most of the time to kind of say something or make a point. Mm-hmm. So I don't think people should feel pressured into doing it as a way to move forward, because it's not like anything else. It's not everybody's thing. Mm. But I don't think there's anything wrong with it either. I think if what you're trying to say or the idea that you have in your mind requires some form of manipulation and you can do it, then it's no different from just taking, you know, a normal picture. There's no difference to me, as long as, I think I touched on this, you know, what happened with that Amelia Liana quite some time ago, where where she was photoshopping backgrounds into her images. I can understand why people find that distasteful.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's just a case of, I don't know, I just think
who cares? No, do you know what I mean?
I think it might not have the same meaning as some of the pioneers of manipulation historically, like Hannah Hawke, who made these really political photo montages. She was, you know, recycling and reworking other people's images from magazines. She was saying something political, so then I suppose it might be more meaningful. But I think there's better ways to react to something that you don't particularly like than, you know, attacking people, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think like, I would hate to think that people were worried about not being able to use Photoshop in that kind of way and think that without that skill that you can't have, you know, you can't grow your Instagram account, because I think I don't think that's right, to be honest. I don't agree with that. And I guess I don't do a great deal of that myself. I think most of my images are, I use Photoshop, obviously, but I don't, you know, it's not an account of manipulated kind of, that kind of style of photography.
Yeah.
I'll do, you know, things that I need to do to make sure that I'm happy with the image. But I think you can definitely still grow your account and have, you know, and move forward without that skill. Yeah. But people who choose to use that type of photography is absolutely fine.
Yeah, I agree. It makes me sad when people get so stressed about Instagram. And I don't mean that to sound, it's a really fine line to walk sometimes when you're talking about Instagram, because I don't want to put down anybody who's like you, has worked really hard and is an influencer on Instagram and it's, you know, part of your job. And like Dominique or Sarah, both friends of the podcast, or yeah. Hannah, you
yes,
know,
I'm
like
looking forward to listening to is did you just did it go out today?
Monday.
Day, okay.
So
I remember
funny.
Seeing it on. Yeah, my days are blurring into one. yeah, I'm looking forward to listening to that.
We yeah. talk about you in it as well. But yeah, like I don't want to put down anybody who, but you know. Everyone just needs to calm down, I think. You know, if it isn't your job right now and you don't want it to be, and even if you do, like Dominique said something about, you know, you've got to kind of experiment and have fun.
Oh, definitely.
Find your style. That's important. That's as important as all the other things that you should be doing to grow your Instagram. One of the most
definitely
important
trying
ones is,
and testing and yeah. failing. You know, you learn yeah. so much from, you know, And it's, I think it's unfair because people should be trying things and testing things to move forward. There's a lot of pressure at the minute for, you know, but it should be real. It should be this, that and the other. And it can have an effect on people to the point where they just stop making work. And that's, yeah. that's the most tragic thing ever, yeah. you know?
I think, and failing, that is important. You can't be frightened to fail, although we all are, but it's not failure on such
yeah,
a grand scale.
Yeah, we all are,
scale.
Definitely.
Have you
I
ever
mean,
had...
Didn't...
Yeah, and I got, you were you going to say?
Well, yeah, I mean, some of the pictures I've posted on Instagram, if I've tried something new, like, I look back and I think, God, what was what on earth was I thinking there? But it's part and parcel of learning, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, like I said before, to progress and to move forward, you have to try stuff out and test stuff, and you know, yeah.
I think that with Instagram, podcasts are the same, and YouTube I think is the same. It's a medium unlike any other where people feel a lot more entitled to criticize. It's not yeah. so much the same with blogging, although yeah, there's criticism, but you don't really expect people's, if you went back over my first blog posts, I mean, just don't even look at them. They make me feel really upset. They're so bad. They are so, so bad. Like, the writing is bad. It's not so bad that you think, oh my God, you're terrible. You can tell there's a good writer in there, but you can tell it's a good writer hidden really, really far down. The photos are horrific. Everything about it is terrible. They're so cringeworthy, but
isn't it also great to see the journey as well, and
exactly.
to see how far you've come and how you've yeah. progressed? And
totally. And I leave them up there.
It's really important.
It is really important. And I don't feel like if anyone looks at those, they would think any less of my writing now. But somehow with Instagram or with early podcast episodes or with YouTube, people feel really entitled that they can have an opinion on how you're changing and how you're evolving, or you didn't used to do things like this, but now you do. And do you know what I mean? I don't know if
yeah.
I'm making myself clear, but
I think it's people are like that about pretty much everything, especially in, I don't know, you know, when you think about things like food snobbery or yeah, there's lots of, you know, a lot of people taking, you know, the moral high ground, and it's kind of like my opinion on nothing.
Yeah,
and it's just
true.
A bit kind of, you know, people should just be able to kind of get on and do what they want to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's probably a good note to end it on. Just do what you want to do, guys.
No, but not. I just think nothing's ever as black and white as... We kind of want there to be an answer for everything, I think.
Yeah.
it's human nature, but there's just not, you know, nothing's ever as black and white as that. So I think instead of, I always feel like instead of talking about something that you don't agree with or that you see as negative, to me, the better idea would be to just focus on what, you know, what you can do to be more positive or to, you know, if you really believe in something, then to me, it's a case of, well, focus on doing what you can to do that thing rather than focus on the stuff that, you know, other people are doing that kind of questions that or isn't the same.
Yeah.
It just seems like a backward way of doing stuff, I suppose.
Yeah, I agree. It can really hold you back as well, can't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So where can everybody find you online?
So Instagram, which is The Slow Traveller. I also have my blog, which is theslowtraveller.net. I kind of tweet from time to time, and that, actually, do you know what? I think it's, yeah, Slow Traveller The, because I couldn't get, I think it was taken.
Who stole it? We need to kick them off.
It obviously wasn't a great kind of business move, the Slow Traveller, you know, at the time when I chose it. Sometimes I think I wish I could just, you know, use my name now, but I feel like I kind of can't let go of it.
I know, I'm in the same boat at the moment. I'd really like to get rid of Wanderloose and just be Lucy Lucroft.
Just be you.
Yeah, but whatever, it's too much of a fad.
Yeah, no, I'm the same.
Thank you so much for being part of the podcast.
No, it's been lovely. Thanks for having me, Lucy.
Thanks for listening to What She Said. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and if you did, please think about leaving me a 5-star rating and a review if you have time. This really helps other people find the podcast and means that Apple don't hide me in their vaults. If you fancy joining my small but perfectly formed bunch of podcast fans for chit chat on Facebook, head to facebook.com/groups/whatshesaidpodcast and come and join us.